Being an effective manager, qualification number three, be like Jesus. I mean, of course, why not make Jesus the model for almost anything you do? If you want to be a manager, certainly the example of Jesus is a good one. We're going to look at Jesus as sort of a case study, some of the things that he said, some of the things that he did, and then extrapolate that to being a manager. So one thing, to be like Jesus, ask people to follow you. Matthew 4, verse 18, as Jesus was walking beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon, called Peter, and his brother Andrew. They were casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. Come follow me, Jesus said, and I will send you out to fish for people. At once they left their nets and followed him. Jesus boldly came to people. Now, did he know them? Some argue that maybe he had met them before, that maybe he had some kind of relationship with them. But whatever the case, Jesus was bold enough to say, follow me. Join the thing that I am doing. If you're planting a church, you have to be bold enough to ask people to follow. Will they follow? You don't know. Just yesterday, I was golfing with the president of Christian Leaders Institute, Henry Reinga, and we were golfing, and one of the guys that we were golfing with was from our background in terms of not only ethnically, but also church-wise, but he is someone who gave up church long ago. And we had this banter going back and forth. He would poke the church a little bit and God a little bit, and we would laugh and try to poke back a little bit. But finally, probably about halfway through the golf, Henry just mentioned, hey, I'm preaching in the local church here this Sunday. I think you should come, you and your wife. And he said, well, yeah, maybe, you know, I'll talk to my wife, which means I'm not coming, right? But Henry, you know, left that for a while, but then he came back to it and said, hey, so if you come this Sunday, why don't we go out to eat? I know a really cool place. I'll talk to my wife. You talk to your wife. So he's like, you know, you can invite people and people will say maybe, which means no often, but you have to be bold enough to keep coming to invite in such a way that they almost can't say no. When I planted a church in Vancouver, you know, I'm not as outgoing as some people are. And I wondered, how am I going to plant a church? We don't have any people, and how are we going to get people? Well, I reached one neighbor, and this neighbor was not only outgoing, but she was bold. She would tell, you know, neighbors about our church. And then she would say, and we'll pick you up for church at 9:30. I mean, she just wouldn't give them a no. She personally probably got 8 different families from our neighborhood to come to our church because she was bold enough to just simply ask people to follow. Patiently deal with those you lead, Matthew 8:23. Then Jesus got into the boat and his disciples followed him. Suddenly, a furious storm came on the lake so that the waves swept over the boat. But Jesus was sleeping. The disciples went and woke him, saying, Lord, save us. We're going to drown. And he replied, you have little faith. Why are you so afraid? Then he got up and rebuked the winds and the waves, and it was completely calm. That phrase, you of little faith, is a phrase that Jesus used often of his disciples. If he wanted to, he probably could have said, oh, you of no faith, because the disciples often exhibited no faith at all. But Jesus recognized the little faith that they had. And in another place, Jesus said, if you have the faith of a mustard seed, which is the smallest seed there is, if you have a small faith, you can say to the mountain, move, and it will move. So Jesus, in the one way, is saying, you know, your faith isn't as strong as it could be. But on the other hand, Jesus was very patient with his disciples. He kept saying this over and over and over again and kept encouraging them. And so that, with your own people, build them up. When they're hurting, when they're weak, lift them up. They're not always going to be the kind of employee that you really want. Sometimes they're going to exhibit all kinds of brokenness, and you need to be there to lift them up. Eat with the downhearted and the proud alike. That's what Jesus did. Luke 15. Now the tax collectors and the sinners, okay, so those were the downhearted, were all gathering around to hear Jesus. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." Well, he welcomes Pharisees and people who think they're better than other people as well. Jesus was comfortable in with both groups. Both groups have their own problems and issues, but Jesus didn't discriminate against any particular group of people. And as a manager, you don't want to do that either. People are people. You accept people as they are, or you take people as they are. When you're dealing with customers, when you're dealing with vendors, when you're dealing with people, it doesn't matter who they are, whether they're high or low, whether they are wealthy people or they're just getting by. People matter to God. They've been made and created in His image. In that culture, to eat with someone was like saying, "You're my friend," or I accept you." And the reason the Pharisees and the teachers of the law were muttering and complaining that Jesus was eating with these sinners is because in that culture, when you did eat with someone, it's like you accepted them. And the Pharisees and the teachers, "Well, how can you accept tax collectors?" Tax collectors are our own people, Jewish people, who collect taxes for the Romans. And the only way that they do it is because they collect more taxes than the Romans demand so that they themselves get rich off their own people. So who in the world is going to associate with someone like that? Well, Jesus did. Doesn't mean he approved of what they did, but Jesus' goal was to influence everyone that he met, whether they were proud or whether they were sinners or troublemakers. Challenge the proud, Mark 10:17. As Jesus started on his way, a man ran up to him and fell on his knees before him. "Good teacher," he asked, "what must I do to inherit eternal life?" "Why do you call me good?" Jesus answered. "No one is good except God alone. You know the commandments. You shall not murder. You should not commit adultery. You should not steal. You should not give false testimony. You shall not defraud. Honor your father and mother." "Teacher," he declared, "all these I've kept since I was a boy." And Jesus looked at him and loved him. "One thing you lack," he said, "go sell everything you have and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. Then come follow me." At this, the man's face fell. He went away sad because he had great wealth. Challenge the proud. Jesus wasn't afraid. Now, here's a wealthy person. This is a person that could probably contribute to Jesus and his cause. I mean, Jesus and his disciples, they were running around teaching and you know, healing people and doing all this. They had to eat. They had to sleep. They needed some kind of ministry support. Here's this wealthy person, and Jesus challenges him. You know, it challenges him in front of all these people. This person was proud. "I've done all the right things," and you know, this person really came to Jesus to be honored. And so Jesus sees the real need. He sees the pride, and so he goes right to it. He just tells the truth. And sometimes as a manager, that's what you need to do. You need to tell the truth. It doesn't matter whether the person has a lot of influence or not. The truth sometimes has to be told. Encourage the disbelieving. Mark 9, verse 20. So they brought him, a father brought his son who was demon-possessed to Jesus. And when the spirit saw Jesus, it immediately threw the boy into convulsions. He fell to the ground and rolled around, foaming at the mouth. And Jesus asked the boy's father, "How long has he been like this?" "From childhood," he answered. "It has often thrown him into the fire or water to kill him. But if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us." "If you can," said Jesus. Everything is possible for him who believes. Immediately, the boy's father exclaimed, I want you to listen to this. I do believe. Help me overcome my unbelief. When Jesus saw that a crowd was running to the scene, he rebuked the impure spirit. You deaf and mute spirit, he said, I command you to come out of him and never enter him again. The father said, I believe. Help my unbelief. I think this is the most encouraging, or some of the most encouraging words in Scripture. Because a lot of times we do believe. We do believe. We do believe in God. We believe that God is in control of everything. We believe in the business that we're doing. We believe in our church. We believe as a manager, as you're trying to lead and get people, that you believe in what you're doing. Part of you believes it. But part of you doubts it. And people wonder, well, how does belief and doubt go together? It seems like you either believe or you doubt. This one passage shows you that belief and doubt actually fit together. In fact, when we believe something, we don't know it. We believe it, but we don't know it. We're willing to go in that direction. We believe in something, and so we give our money to it. We believe in something, and so we give our time to it. But that doesn't mean we don't have any doubts. In fact, belief, by its very definition, has some doubt. Because if you didn't have any doubt, you wouldn't believe it, you would know it. Belief already suggests that it could be improved. I believe something, but I could believe it more. And so if I can believe it more, there must be a little bit of doubt there. Belief and doubt can go together. So your people are struggling. They do believe in what they're doing. They do believe in your leadership. They do believe in God. But there's doubts there too. So knowing that as a manager, going in knowing that people both believe and doubt at the same time, what can you do to help them overcome their doubts? See, knowing that, you can get people to admit their doubts. Most people don't want to admit their doubts because if they admit their doubts, it looks like they don't believe. But if you can assure them, look, talking about your doubts doesn't mean that you don't believe. Talking about your doubts, in fact, is going to help identify those things that are hurting your belief, and we can actually maybe do something about it and give you a stronger belief. Meet your people's needs. Mark 1, a man with leprosy came to Jesus and begged him on his knees. If you are willing, you can make me clean. And Jesus was indignant. He reached out his hand and touched the man. I am willing, he said, be clean. Immediately the leprosy left him and he was cleansed. Now, a leper in those days, people thought that leprosy was contagious. It's a disease of the skin. It's actually a disease of the nerves. The feeling in your extremities goes away, and people don't know that their hand is in the fire. Or they don't know when something is pinching the hand, so they don't move it. So gradually, all the extremities fall off. So it's a horrible disease. And 2,000 years ago, people took the leper and they put him in their own colony. People thought you could catch leprosy, so they isolated these people. So here's this leper. He's been isolated from people. He's been isolated from his family. And he calls out to Jesus and he wants to be clean. Now, Jesus could heal him, you know, from 30 feet. I mean, there's the man. Here's Jesus. He's calling out. He wants to be clean. Jesus says, "Okay, I'm willing to heal you. All right, be clean, and then come over and give him a hug." But in the text, it says Jesus was indignant. He reached out his hand and touched the man. "I am willing," he said, "be clean." So he touched the man before he was clean. It's probably the first non-leper person that has touched this man in years. Jesus, I think, saw the real need. This person needed to be touched. He needed to be accepted as he was before he was clean. So with your people too, it's, you know, people don't say what their real need is. Maybe one of the people that you're trying to manage, maybe their real need is to just be encouraged once in a while. But they're not going to say it. They're not going to go around and say, well, you know, I really need a hug today. People aren't going to say what they need. You need to see it. Or this person over here that you're leading, what he needs is to be challenged. He feels encouraged when you recognize that he has some gifts and abilities and you challenge him to go do something. So know your people's needs. What is driving them? What is motivating them? And how can you meet those needs? Disciple your people like Jesus did. Matthew 11. After Jesus had finished instructing his 12 disciples, he went on from there to teach and preach in the town of Galilee. So Jesus spent time. He did all this stuff. He was out healing people and preaching to the crowds and sitting in a boat and speaking to people, feeding the 5,000, feeding the 4,000. But you'll see throughout the Gospels, Jesus spending time with just his 12 disciples, teaching them, going over. You know, I told this story, but did you get it? And then he would go over it and explain it to them. Disciple. Jesus did this for 3 years. And after 3 years of being in the Jesus discipleship school, he sent them out. You know, you disciples are going to change the world, build something called the church that will become the largest organization the world has ever seen. Disciple your people. Teach your people. Send your people out. Luke 10. Jesus had only been working with his disciples a short period of time, and these are not even just the 12. After this, the Lord appointed 72 others and sent them two by two ahead of him to every town and place where he was about to go. He told them, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. Go, I'm sending you out like lambs among wolves." I'm sending you out. It's going to be really rough. I remember the first time I got sent out. I was on a mission trip to Ogden, Utah. Utah is a Mormon sort of stronghold. And I remember the pastor said, we're going to go out. We're going to knock on doors. We had learned how to share our faith. We're going to go out and we're going to knock on doors. So he sent us two by two. I had another partner. And we had to go to random doors, talk with them, share Jesus with them, and then leave, and then report back. So, first door, we knocked on, and as I'm knocking on the door, I'm like praying, "Dear God, please, please don't let anyone be home." I didn't want to talk to somebody. So anyway, some lady opens the door, says, "Come on in," real friendly person. So we sit down in the living room. And we were taught that you should talk about just stuff, you know, like, you know, there's a picture on the wall. Well, it's a nice picture. And I see you're into needlepoint. And you find some common thing to talk. So that's what we did. We talked about the needlepoint. We talked about the color of the walls. We talked about the carpet. You know, we talked about whatever we could think about. We did that for about 45 minutes and then we left. We never shared our faith. That night I felt so bad. I felt like such a failure. Here I went on this whole thing, this mission trip, because I wanted to learn how to share my faith. Here's my first opportunity, and I did nothing. So the next day, I said, "Lord, give me another chance. I will do it." So the next day we knocked on a door, and it was a lady that had like three little kids. She was in the kitchen refrying the refried beans. We were in the kitchen with her. The kids are running around, jumping on things, on the table, on the chairs. And she's doing the beans and, you know, it's just pandemonium. But I shared my faith. I was going to do what I was told and I was going to do it and I did it. And then we left. And I remember thinking, okay, what did I do? I didn't know who this person was. I didn't know what their problems were. I don't know if her husband just left her the night before, and here I am coming with a prepackaged view of Christianity, and your problem is that you don't understand grace, and so I'm going to tell you all about it. I had no idea what her problem was. So what I learned two things. I learned, number one, that you really need to reach out and listen to people first. Don't tell them a solution to a problem you assume they have. You need to listen long enough and know someone long enough to know what their issue and problem is, and then gently try to do something about it. But I'll tell you what I learned about just being sent out. I learned all that stuff because someone sent me out. I wouldn't have known that. It wouldn't have stuck with me. I that whole story just sticks with me because someone sent me out. You got to send your people out. Is it the right thing? Is it the wrong thing? I don't know. People need to get out of their comfort zones. If you're a manager, you can't have just people sitting behind their desks. Send them out. I don't know what that means. Make everyone in the office make some cold calls if you sell something. Take everyone canvassing in the neighborhood. If you're a church and you want to grow a church, take the whole church. No one is exempt. Get people off the couch, getting out there, because no matter how they do, no matter what happens, some good thing is going to happen. Trust your people with the mission. Matthew 16, and I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. Now, Peter, he would speak before he thought. He was very rash. He was sort of self-absorbed sometimes. And yet, Jesus says, on you I will build this church. It's not a perfect thing. You don't have to be perfect. Trust your people with the mission. Are they trustworthy? Do they have all the gifts and abilities? Probably not. But the gates of hell will not prevail against what God does through them. The church is the most amazing thing in the world. If you go to any specific church, they have, the pastor isn't that good. They got some debt. Their music maybe isn't that great. Oh, that church is really good, but then they had a problem with their pastor, and so they had every church has all kinds of problems. It's like, how in the world does a church just keep growing and building? Oh, that church is really boring. A lot of churches are boring, and yet they keep going. Churches expand all over the world, and they're run by average, mediocre people. It's because God is going to build his church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. So trust your people. Jesus trusted his disciples with the mission. They were a ragtag group. So you need to trust your people with the mission. Love your people. John 10. I'm the good shepherd, Jesus said, and the good shepherd lays down his life for his sheep. He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and he leaves the sheep and flees. And the wolf snatches them and scatters them. Don't be a hired hand. If you're a hired hand, you're just doing a job. You only have one life. Why spend the one life that you have just doing a job? We're here to accomplish something. I don't care what your job is. I don't care if you're in a secular organization. It's not a job. It's a calling. You are there to make a difference. Make a difference in the lives of the people you interact with. Make a difference in the lives of the people, the vendors, the seller. It doesn't matter. Whoever you come in contact, you're here on the planet for 70, 80, who knows how many years. And your goal is to make a difference in the lives of people, an eternal difference. Don't be a hired hand.